favorite day of the week. Hey, everyone. How are you? Welcome back or welcome to the Straight Shooter Recruiter Podcast. I am your host and producer because, yeah, this is a one-woman production, Emily Durham. And I am so excited that you are here. As you know, or maybe you don't know because you're new here and like no judgment, love you either way. My whole life revolves around this podcast. I'm a careers coach. I'm a careers writer. I've been a recruiter for many moons. And literally, it brings me joy to help unlock your access to career development, growth, career satisfaction, and ultimately more money. Okay. My goal is to help you thrive in your 9 to 5 and beyond. And the reason I love these kinds of episodes, because yes, I am doing a Q&A episode, if you couldn't tell by the title of this week's pod, is because I love being nosy. And to me, this feels like HR approved gossip. This feels like if HR said, yeah, no problem, honey, you can gossip with me. I love getting nosy in your life. I love giving you real advice. And I most especially just love hearing what is going down with your job search, with your career, with your coworkers, with your friends and family who maybe aren't being as supportive as they should be. And I think it starts such important conversations. So I am so excited. I've got a couple of really, really good questions y'all sent in that are highlighted on my little iPad. And don't forget, if you're like, wait, I have questions, whether it's about promotions, whether it's about career, I always have a link in the description of this episode and in all of my social handles for you to submit your questions. I get hundreds every single week, so I do my best to go through all of them to make sure they all get answered. Make sure you're clicking that link and submitting your questions. Okay, without further ado, before I start answering these questions, make sure you're leaving a little rating and a review and share that you're listening on social media. That is how the show grows. It means so much. It takes what? 2 seconds? 2 seconds? Oh my gosh, I'll pause. 1, 2, done. Thank you so much for your contribution to the show. All right, maybe I should have stopped at one coffee. I've got mine in my hand. Hopefully you've got yours too. Let's hop on into it. Dear Emily, I love the podcast. I listen every week. Thank you. Here's the deal. I'm 6 months into my first full-time role and I'm loving it. My boss is amazing. She supports me growing in the role as I discover what I enjoy working on most, and I can tell she really likes me. This is my first time with a salary, and I have a concern I'm hoping you can help me with. My boss is going on maternity leave, and I worry how this may affect me getting a raise in the future. The timeline doesn't exactly overlap with my 1 year at the company, but I can't help but feel it's going to be more difficult to lobby for myself if she won't be around for a few months to see me in action leading up to that point. Besides, it would feel unnatural to bring up a raise right as she returns from leave. How do you recommend I prepare for this? Is a raise after 1 year even reasonable or something I should push for? Felt like you'd be the best person to ask. Babe, promise I am. Thank you so much for writing this in. I want to explain quickly how maternity leaves work at companies, only because I think it'll actually give you some comfort in terms of like the process side of things. So when someone is leaving for a parental leave, and in Canada, thank goodness, that is typically a year to 18 months, they're typically going to have one of two things happen. One is they're going to have someone who already works at that company temporarily stretch into that position to keep things going. Or the second thing they're going to do is hire someone on a contract or like term basis to basically fill that position until that individual returns. You have to guarantee in most North American states and provinces that that position is available for the individual upon their return. The reason that I share this and the reason that this is important is that this is a highly documented, highly regulated process. It's not a scrappy like, oh, someone's going to come in and help out for a couple of months. This has to be unbelievably documented to keep things afloat. There's a lot of legal risk. For example, if they had a manager come in and they totally like messed up the team, changed the way the team operated, that would be a real risk as this individual on parental leave comes back, right? Because they're coming back perhaps to a less cohesive work environment. Maybe that means the job has changed. It's really important that they're well documented in this. Why I am telling you this, it is highly, highly likely that your current manager who is about to go on maternity leave or parental leave is going to have a very robust handover they're preparing for this individual because that is compliant. That is like a regulatory need. It's not like they're just going to not show up to work one day and that's it for a year. That also includes performance. So a couple of things I would start having conversations about now are, number one, how diligently is your performance being tracked at the company generally? Are you having monthly one-on-ones with this manager? And if so, are they documented and where? Do they live on a Word document or is it in a public cloud-based system that your new manager will have access to. The issue isn't that it should, like, I think what I want to call out is, like, your manager shouldn't be the reason you get a raise. It should be a well-documented process and system that is objective. So any person in that role, because maybe your manager wins the lottery and is like, bye, I'm gone. You don't want that to put your career at risk. What good companies do is they accurately document these things, so that if your manager wins the lottery and leaves tomorrow, or gets Regina George run over by a bus, not, I love your manager, I'm just saying generally, there's no risk. Like, everything needs to be well documented. So number one, ask your manager now, hey, quick question, how are we documenting these one-on-ones so I can continue to track my performance as you go out on leave and as I grow at this company? Making sure everything is documented is actually probably going to cover like 90% of the concerns that you're having. The other thing you asked was, is it even normal to ask for a raise after a year? Hell yeah. Hope that helps. 100%. It's normal. I would actually say if you're not asking for a raise every year, you're running the risk of being underpaid. Inflation continues to rise. If your salary doesn't, you're underpaid. That's how I would think about it. So you're not being greedy by asking for this. My biggest piece of advice, make sure this is well documented. And ultimately, then you don't have a risk. Because if everything is clear and crisp and documented, and you're continuing to perform well and grow, and you make sure that you're keeping that same routine of one-on-ones that are documented with this interim manager, you are going to be more than fine. Dear Emily, I love the show. Thank you. It loves you back. What is your advice to someone who needs to job hop twice in a row? The first one just being over 3 months because I did not enjoy the position. The second being 8 months because I'll need to move back to my hometown for family. I didn't want to move again for a long time, so I also don't want to settle. Obsessed with you and your show, by the way, could really use your advice. I'm obsessed with you back. Thank you so much. Okay, I actually talked about this last week a little bit, is that I think the notion of job hopping is entirely made up by boomers. Sorry. But it's true. Like, job hopping is not a real concept. The notion that you have to be loyal to a company for 2 years in order for that work experience to count is crazy for me. And a big reason that job hopping is like a thing, or even like a concept that we discuss, is because companies want to retain you for as long as possible because it's less expensive. If they hire externally, there is a cost that they absorb for recruiting, time, work lost, and then also having to pay updated market value for net new talent. Versus when you were hired maybe 5 years ago, your rate, yes, might go up 3% every year as you get raises, but you're not going to be at external market rate. That's why if you actually want to make a lot of money, you kind of have to job hop a little bit. With that being said, I do want to keep it 100% real. A lot of companies will look at resumes where you have less than a year at companies back to back, and they're going to be like, okay, why should I hire you? Are you going to stick around? So there is this kind of balance where I personally think it's BS, but we need to be thoughtful about how we're navigating our career. Here's the thing. Life happens, right? You hated the gig after 3 months. You got out. Good. There's nothing wrong with that. I usually say give it 3 to 6 months, and if you still hate it, then you leave. So that's more than fine. And your other situation is familial. So what I would say is put these things on your resume, and you can always include one sentence in your resume at the end of that work experience and say, like, had to terminate employment to move home for familial reasons or for personal reasons. And what I would do is just make the networking portion of your job search moving forward the most important part, because what you want to do is get ahead of the narrative. It's all about like PR and how you spin it. You don't want someone to look at your resume and decide that you are unstable when you're not. What you want to do is get ahead of it. So as you apply, you're reaching out to those recruiters, those hiring managers, and you are telling them the story before they have the opportunity to spin it themselves. And you're going to do that by reaching out directly, asking for a 15-minute, you know, coffee chat, phone call, not necessarily with the recruiter. I would probably recommend doing it with the hiring manager that you find on LinkedIn. And that's going to help you a lot. I know I always talk about also how cover letters have passed away, how they're no longer with us. This is kind of a good opportunity for a cover letter. There's nothing wrong with you using this as an opportunity to tell the story of why. Because what you want to do is control the narrative and control that story. So whether that's a cover letter or a 4-sentence blurb at the top of your resume, just own that narrative as many places as you can to make sure that people aren't making assumptions and that it's data-backed in how they're thinking. But all to say, do not beat yourself up about this. This is life. This happens. I would say the next move you make, do your best to make it a year to two, only to offset you having to do this extra labor in the future. Hey, Emily, thank you for all of your wonderful advice. You are a career magician, and I'm immensely grateful for your insight. Your content has been instrumentally helpful for me as I'm in the process of transitioning from teaching into corporate training and L&D roles. Okay, firstly, thank you. Secondly, I love this. This is so exciting. Okay, let's get into the meat and potatoes of your question. Okay, so you said, I've taken your advice on networking with everyone I can, and I've had over 40 informational chats within the last month with both my close network and folks who I reached out to cold on LinkedIn with career progressions that intrigue me. I have been having incredibly productive and quality conversations, and I leave all of them feeling more and more confident in myself each time. I am shocked with how open people are to having conversations with me about their career journeys, and I am loving connecting with people. I love this. Okay. The next thing you said, this is like the big part, is my question is in regards to keeping these networks and connections warm. Most people I've spoken with say, I'm happy to stay in contact with you and have another conversation again. I would absolutely love to talk with them again, and I'm not afraid to reach out, but I want to be strategic about how I should conduct a follow-up conversation after our first informational interview. I already got the basics of their background and what their role entails in the first conversation, and I want to leave the next conversation with them feeling like it was productive and not a waste of either of our time. I am committed to transitioning out of the classroom and into a career that can fulfill me and lead me to more opportunities for advancement. I know from your advice that networking is essential to landing a job, so all of your feedback is super appreciated. Oh my gosh, I appreciate you so much, my friend. Thank you, thank you, thank you for being here. First of all, love that you are having these high value conversations. And it's so true. I didn't realize until I started actively networking just how willing people are to help and have conversations. And I think a lot of it is paying it forward. I know I had so many career chats when I was transitioning into different industries and like my first job and looking for an internship and all of these things. And it's amazing seeing that kind of full circle now being on the other end of those conversations. So I love that you're doing this. And I love that you're being strategic. And this is where I actually think networking gets a bit of a bad reputation, because a lot of people think about networking through the lens of, okay, great, I need to talk to 10 people this week, 10 people that week. But if you're not actually building authentic relationships, you're out of luck. Like, it's gonna go nowhere. The whole point of networking is to build high value, real relationships that then give you a direct tie to things like referrals, to people hopping you into their network. Suddenly you've got someone advocating for you when you're not in the room. And that only works when it's rooted in a real relationship. All to say, you're doing the right stuff. Here's how I typically recommend structuring the second conversation after your first informational interview. You're spot on. The first chat should really just be absorbing all of the information about this individual, their career journey, what their kind of big learnings were. What I would do is go back to your notes or go back to the LinkedIn profiles of these individuals and have 3 to 5 really targeted questions and things that you want to learn with a think piece question in there. So for example, you were speaking to someone in learning and development at Google. I feel like I'm always giving Google free cloud. But let's say you were speaking to them. They were talking a little bit about how the like visual design and instructional design part of the work was really significant and something they had to learn. Maybe they also talked a little bit about how like the stakeholder management and working with the business units is something that was really significant. What I would recommend doing is pulling out a couple of the core things they shared and have specific questions that sound something like, can you talk to me about your biggest learning on stakeholder management? You spoke to me a bit about it in our last session, but I'd love to go deeper on your approach to this. How did you define your approach? Or, for example, if they're talking about learning something, you know, last week we spoke a little bit about how you learned a lot about the visual and graphic design element of learning. What was your approach to becoming an expert at this? How do you continue to evolve as the industry evolves? Literally treat it like an interview and make your goal to understand how they've learned and evolved, what skills they've picked up and how. Make the theme of conversation 2, okay, great, you know, conversation 1, this is what you did. Conversation 2 is how did you do it and how can I do it? And the think piece question. So you're gonna have 3 or 4 questions that are like, how did you get there? Make the last question a think piece. And it's either going to be something like, based on the experience I've shared, what are some of the resources and things that you would be doing if you were me to help me make this transition? That's a big one. Or you can come prepared with something relevant happening in your industry and say, like, I'd love to kind of get your perspective. I've seen a lot of work happening on LinkedIn Learning courses. Do you think that's going to impact how organizations create learning and development content internally? Like, I'd love to get your perspective on this. And what's beautiful about that is if you ask a think piece, a couple weeks later, you can email and say, wow, thank you again for your time a couple weeks back. It was awesome. I couldn't stop thinking about our conversation. Here's a couple more articles that popped up. And boom, suddenly you're in for conversation three. And I would say after conversation three or four, you no longer need to be as structured with the questions you're asking because it just starts to flow. And that's also when you can start asking if you can add value. Like, are there things that you're doing they can benefit from? Mentorship is beautiful because it's two people benefiting. And I think once you kind of hit that flow where it feels more conversational and like, hey, how are you? You were talking to me about that project. How did that go? Okay, cool. Yeah, that's amazing. You know, I applied for a couple of jobs. I learned a little bit about how Point-Click Care or Intuit does learning and development. It was fascinating. Like, here you go. And suddenly it's a conversation. Suddenly it's a quick LinkedIn message when you want to chat. It doesn't need to be as structured. All to say, you are absolutely crushing it. I personally know many people who move from in-class education to corporate learning and development, and they absolutely love it and are unbelievably high performers. So congratulations on you working as hard as you are on this. Did you enjoy that as much as I did? I think you have to say yes, because you're here. I love you so much, by the way. I really do. This is my favorite way to spend a Sunday. I'm in my PJs, I'm having coffee, and we're just chatting. And I love that we're so no BS and just like, I feel like it's bestie vibes. I really do. I cannot thank you enough for spending the time to listen to the show today. Friendly reminder, if you give a rating and a review, forever I will love you. Perhaps that's a sign I need to stop. Thank you all so much. I will talk to you in next week's episode. Love you muchly. Ciao.